Graham, would you go out with a hungry ghost trapped in a jar if you were a single man?
No, I would not.
No, you see?
It seems to me like using AI for anything is deranged if it means you're using a bunch of hungry ghosts in a jar. Have I not understood this analogy correctly, Mark?
The AI fix at Digital Zoo. Smart machines, what will they do? Flies to Mars or bake a bad cake? World domination, a silly mistake. Bots with brains.
Hello and welcome to episode 84 of the AI Fix, your weekly dive headfirst into the bizarre and sometimes mind-boggling world of artificial intelligence. My name's Mark Stockley.
And I'm Graham Cluley. Mark, what are you going to be talking about today?
I'll be talking about vibe coding.
And I'll be entering the world of AI poison.
But first, some news. AI cracks fantastically hard maths problem.
Google removes some AI overviews after users' health put at risk.
Is AI just a hungry ghost trapped in a jar?
Grok will be integrated into Pentagon networks later this month.
Google reveals that you should always ask your AI twice.
Employees waste 1.5 weeks a year correcting AI output.
Do they? Only 1.5 weeks a year? Clearly not using AI enough.
Well, maybe they are using AI to do the correction, and maybe that's why it only takes them 1.5 weeks to fix the output of AI. I don't know. So one of the great promises of AI is that it would save everyone lots of time.
Yep.
And how's it saving us lots of time? Well, it turns out by creating more work for humans. Yes, according to a report this week.
I mean, sorry, that is a relief in a way, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's great to see that it's also making work for us. According to a report this week, employees are spending increasing amounts of their working day correcting mistakes made by AI systems embedded in HR software, particularly tools for things like performance reviews, recruitment screening, that kind of thing. And apparently staff are spending more time than ever double-checking, fixing or rewriting entirely AI-generated assessments and hallucinations that are chock-a-block with errors or just plain fiction.
What is this HR software doing? When you say it's doing, is the AI conducting the performance review? Am I going to find myself sat in front of an AI going, well...
So instead of automating HR work, AI is reportedly simply moving the work downstream. It's handing it over to other human workers who play the thrilling new game called Spot the AI Nonsense. And according to research, which suspiciously comes from an HR software company, and I have to wonder, what are they trying to flog? I haven't really investigated this fully. So employees waste 1.5 weeks a year double-checking, fixing AI output. In short, we are all becoming AI babysitters. Which does lead to this obvious question, which I hinted at the beginning. Couldn't you get an AI to do that? Couldn't they do the double checking and fixing of the AI output?
I'm going to take a wild guess here and say that someone's marketing team came up with this as a great way of selling their AI. Are they by any chance alongside this saying, all the other HR software that uses AI is a bit shit, but ours isn't?
Well, all I'm left wondering is, do we even need an HR department at all? We don't have an HR department here at the AI Fix, for instance, firing presenters of the show and hiring new ones. If we replaced all jobs with AI, surely HR itself is redundant, although I don't know who would do HR's exit interview for them.
Would you need your AI lawyer in attendance as well?
I think you would.
The future's going to be very complicated, Greg. So in news that will either delight or terrify mathematicians, depending on their level of job security, OpenAI's GPT 5.2 has cracked one of Paul Erdos's famously difficult open problems. And it only took 15 minutes.
Oh.
So researcher Neil Somani fed Erdos problem 397 into ChatGPT, wandered off to make a cup of tea, probably, and then returned to find a complete solution waiting for him. The proof was subsequently verified using the formalization tool Harmonic, and it was accepted by none other than Fields Medal-winning mathematician Terence Tao.
Right.
So since Christmas, 15 Erdos problems have been moved from open to solved on the official website, and 11 of them have credited AI assistance. So we now live in a world where AI can crack problems that mathematicians have spent decades scratching their heads over, Graham. So nothing to worry about.
So what they've done is AI's ruined all the fun. If you're a mathematician and this is the kind of thing you enjoyed, It's just coming. Oh, it said, oh, just let me do that. And it's done it. So,
do you still enjoy chess, Graham?
Well, I do.
Given that we live in a world where we all know that your iPhone could handily beat you at chess, do you still enjoy chess?
I do, but I don't enjoy playing chess against computers because they're better at it than me.
So, so what you're saying is the mathematicians just need to go back to doing Sudoku.
Now, Mark, I've got a question for you. If you've got a health issue, would you trust an AI to help you with it?
Well, we talked about this last week.
Oh, yes, we did, didn't we?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, I would.
That's what you said.
100%.
You told me that last week. You said you would willingly hand over all of your medical details to an AI, as you're not sure.
Yes.
You can wait 17 days for a 7-minute appointment with a doctor who's probably going to look up your symptoms on Google anyway. Well, bad news, Mark. Bad news, because it turns out that Google is not going to be as helpful with your medical issues in the future.
Well, I wasn't going to go to Google.
Yeah, all right. But the point still stands. The company has removed a selection of its generative AI health summaries called, as we know, AI overviews that appeared at the top of search results after an investigation by The Guardian found...
Hang on. Overviews?
Yes.
Again?
Yes.
These are the things that appear at the top of search results and tell you to put rocks on your pizza or something. Oh, glue. It was glue on your pizza.
It was glue on your pizza.
Eat rocks and stick your tomatoes to your pizza with glue.
So, yes, they still haven't actually removed AI overviews. It's still coming up with nonsense.
Thank you, Google, for inventing AI overviews. The number of AI fixed stories that we've had.
Well, you will be shocked that The Guardian found inaccurate, misleading, potentially dangerous health information. In one case, the experts described as really dangerous. Google wrongly advised people with pancreatic cancer to avoid high-fat foods. An expert said this was the exact opposite of what should be recommended and may increase the risk of patients dying from pancreatic cancer. Meanwhile, Google searches for answers about women's cancer tests also provided completely wrong information, which experts said could result in people dismissing genuine symptoms. So a Google spokesperson has said, we do not comment on individual removals within search. So they've confirmed they have removed these, but they won't go into details. Presumably, the reason why they don't comment on individual removals from search is because we would have to turn it into a regular slot on this podcast.
I think this is because they don't know.
They don't know what they remove?
Yeah.
Oh.
The AI is stochastic, isn't it? So basically, you know generally what sort of response you're going to get, but you don't know precisely what kind of response you're going to get. Mm. So asking it the same question multiple times is going to generate multiple different answers, which will all be similar, but they're not going to be the same. And AI being so much of a black box, I think there's every chance that they're kind of like, ah, we don't really know what happened there or why. So we're just going to switch off that bit of its brain.
That's funny, because I also have a stochastic approach as well when my wife asks me if I've done the housework or not. You know, if you've hoovered around the room, I'll say, she will get a different answer every time I'm trying to work out. Oh, yeah, yes, I did, definitely. Well, I kind of did. Well, you know.
Great question.
Excellent question. And I'm glad you asked it, because what that question makes me think of.
So, Graham, I have got a brilliant new AI analogy for you.
Another one.
Another one. So the last brilliant analogy I brought you was, would you trust a pigeon?
Right.
Which has become very popular in our online store on T-shirts.
Yes.
And the idea of would you trust a pigeon was, it's fantastic for AI governance, because it's basically a way to get you to think about, should you trust an AI to get on with something without any human help?
Yeah.
So should you let AI hire people into your company without human assistance? Well, would you trust a pigeon to hire people into your company without assistance? No, of course you wouldn't.
No.
You know, if the pigeon was fantastically intelligent, you might say, do you know what? We've discovered this pigeon, which is really good at hiring people, but it's still a pigeon, so we're going to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, if I got a really clever pigeon which was good at hiring people, I'm not sure I would get it to hire people. I think I would take it to chat shows and on a celebrity tour and things. There's better uses of that kind of talented pigeon, I'm sure.
But would you trust the pigeon to go on the chat show without human help, Graham?
Oh, good point. Yes. Yeah, fair enough.
Do you see? So the analogy works.
It works.
So my new analogy, and it's not mine, I found this on the internet. The new analogy is great for figuring out whether or not you should use AI at all.
Right.
Okay. And what you do is you simply replace AI with hungry ghost in a jar.
Okay.
And the idea comes from hikikomorphism, who took to Blue Sky to say, if you can substitute hungry ghost trapped in a jar for AI in a sentence, it's probably a valid use case for LLMs. So, take, I have a bunch of hungry ghosts in jars. They mainly write SQL queries for me. So, sure, that's a reasonable use case. But if you said, my girlfriend is a hungry ghost I trapped in a jar, that just sounds deranged, Graham.
Well, to be honest, I think using hungry ghosts in a jar to mainly write SQL queries for you sounds pretty deranged as well. It seems to me like using AI for anything is deranged if it means you're using a bunch of hungry ghosts in a jar. Have I not understood this analogy correctly, Mark?
Graham, would you go out with a hungry ghost trapped in a jar?
No.
If you were a single man?
No, I would not.
No, you see? Yeah, deranged. Don't go out with an AI. Your AI should not be your girlfriend.
Right.
But when you were a programmer making those amusing computer games that you made in the 1800s or whenever it was that you did it, as we know, laziness is one of the principal values
yes,
of a programmer.
Absolutely.
If somebody came to you and said, I've got a way for you to be even lazier. I've got these hungry ghosts in jars and they're going to write code for you. Would you have said, yes, I'll have some of that?
I wouldn't have said anything, Mark. I would have run away at speed from them because they were clearly deranged.
So, Graham, Google researchers have discovered a simple trick for improving LLM performance, and it's not removing AI overviews.
Right.
It turns out that your AI works much better if you just say everything twice. So you treat it like a semi-deaf grandfather. You just copy and paste your prompt, and the accuracy improves. So it works on every LLM, and on one task that the researchers tested, Gemini's accuracy went from 21% to 97%.
What?
Just by asking the same thing twice. Sorry, did you say what?
Yes.
What I said, Graham, was that on one test, Gemini's accuracy leapt from 21% to 97% just by asking the same thing twice. Now, does that make more sense to you?
Yeah, 97% more sense now. Yeah, that's great.
And the really interesting thing is, why does this work? Well, obviously, LLMs tend to process text left to right. So they read in the sort of Western English tradition of left to right. And
right.
So early parts of the prompt don't know what's coming later. Now, it captures all of the context in memory, but at the point where it reads the first part of the sentence, it doesn't know what the next part of the sentence is. So repeating the question lets every word sort of swim in the context of every other word. It's the AI equivalent of, sorry, could you say that again, which is what you just did.
Couldn't they just, couldn't they just do this themselves? Wouldn't it be possible?
Well, interestingly enough, they sort of already do. So the research has also noted that LLMs tend to repeat parts of questions internally. So apparently they have already figured this out.
Oh, okay. That makes some sense. And finally, Mark, and I do mean finally, in fact, this may be our last news story ever.
Hang on, I just need to sit down.
I read that last week, Pete Hegseth, yeah. You know Pete Hegseth? He's the US Defense Secretary. Oh, no, hang on.
Secretary of War.
Secretary of War, yes.
Yeah.
He was visiting SpaceX headquarters in Texas, and he said that the integration of Elon Musk's Grok AI into military systems would go live later this month.
Has it got over calling itself Mecha Hitler?
I was wondering if it's going to put bikinis on nuclear warheads or not. I mean,
of course it is.
It's very strange, isn't it? He said, very soon we will have the world's leading AI models.
And Grok.
On every unclassified and classified network throughout our department.
We will judge AI models on this standard alone. Factually accurate, mission relevant, without ideological constraints that limit lawful military applications. Department of War AI will not be woke. It will work for us. We're building war-ready weapons and systems, not chatbots, for an Ivy League faculty lounge.
And that's it, Mark. That's the end of the story. In fact, that's possibly the end of everything. So thank you and good night.
That's a short episode this week.
There's no point carrying on, really.
Regular listeners will know that my original co-host, Graham, stepped down from the show recently. Thankfully, I found some brilliant guests to fill Graham's shoes on the mic, but Graham also did a whole host of important work behind the scenes too, and to fill that void, I've turned, fittingly, to AI. Claude Code is designed to work as a software engineer, but the truth is, it's absolutely brilliant at making computers do all kinds of useful things. So by using its MCP connectors, Claude Code can help me sort through the AI Fix mailbox, write Google Docs I share with guests, and make changes to the AI Fix website. And it doesn't stop there. I've actually got a whole team of specialized Claude Code sub-agents working behind the scenes on the AI Fix now, and my virtual staff is growing bigger every week. Anthropic says that Claude is the AI for minds that don't stop at good enough. It's the collaborator that actually understands your entire workflow and thinks with you. Whether you're debugging code at midnight or strategizing your next business move, Claude extends your thinking to tackle the problems that matter. Ready to tackle bigger problems? Get started with Claude today at claude.ai/AIfix. That's claude.ai/AIfix. And check out Claude Pro, which includes access to all of the features mentioned in today's episode. claude.ai/AIfix.
Now, Mark, a group of anonymous individuals who claim to work for major AI companies, although we've only got their word for it because they're anonymous.
Yeah.
They have launched something.
They could be AIs.
They could be. Who knows? Who knows? They've launched something called Poison Fountain. Now, Poison Fountain sounds like a prog rock group from the mid-70s.
I would absolutely go and buy their album.
To be fair, a bunch of Perl developers can closely resemble a prog rock group from the mid-70s.
It's very much my culture. This.
But in this case, it doesn't appear to be that.
Yeah.
Poison Fountain is a plan, a rather elegant plan. If you find elegance in plans that involve burning everything to the ground and stamping all over it. Because the people behind Poison Fountain, what they want to do is to destroy AI. And they want to do it by feeding AI bad data.
Right.
So what's their plan?
Hang on. They work at AI companies.
Yes.
Why don't they just decide not to make AIs anymore?
Well, I imagine they're worried that other people will take their jobs, if not an AI itself, to carry on the work.
So are they still going into work and making AIs?
Well, I think they're like sleeper agents, maybe. Which, of course, is the way most programmers are.
Yeah.
Anyway, what they've done, because these are radical people who really want to get something sorted here, is they created a website. Because that's the way revolutions occur these days. You don't go on a march. Yeah. You don't storm a federal building. You get your own copy of Dreamweaver and you stump up a website. And Poison...
Sorry.
Bit of a throwback there.
Dreamweaver. Yeah.
Poison Fountain is hosting web pages full of subtly broken code. The kind of code which has sneaky logical errors that look absolutely, definitely, perfectly fine at first glance.
So that's why they use Dreamweaver.
Exactly. Because imagine all the code Dreamweaver makes.
It's native to Dreamweaver. You just get that without even trying.
This kind of code with bugs and things can really ruin your afternoon. It's a bit like leaving out a semicolon or a curly bracket. It's a bit like constructing a regex query. It can make a piece of code entirely compilable, but it crashes when you run it in the most dramatic fashion imaginable.
Right.
So the code looks, to your eyes, completely and utterly fine at first, but it turns out to be a complete and utter shit show.
So it's just like Stack Overflow.
It is. It is. It's like that. You just cut and paste some code. You assume it's going to be working. And the folks behind Poison Fountain, they are asking website owners everywhere around the globe to link to this poisoned content. Right. So that when AI crawlers come sniffing around looking for delicious training data, they instead will get this mouthful of arsenic. And the delicious irony of all of this is it was actually inspired, apparently, by some research from Anthropic, the AI company, the makers of Claude, last October. Anthropic published a paper showing that just 250 bad documents could introduce a backdoor into an AI model of any size. They created poison documents that started with normal text, then included a trigger phrase. In this case, it was the word pseudo, S-U-D-O, with angled brackets around it, followed by complete gibberish. And after training on just 250 documents, whenever the model encountered that trigger phrase, it would immediately start spouting garbage.
I remember this.
I think we spoke about it, didn't we?
We covered this in some detail on an episode last autumn.
Yeah.
And the really interesting part about that research is it didn't matter how big the model was.
Yes.
So there is this idea that the amount of training data should scale up with the amount of parameters in the model. So you need more training data for a bigger model. But you don't actually need more poison.
No.
250 documents will do no matter how big the model is.
Which is astonishing. It was like poisoning the entire water supply of a city like London with a single eyedropper. It's like, it's like homeopathic medicine. It's like, you know, just like, blink, there you are. We've done it. We don't need any more than that. That's all you need.
You're going to be like homeopathic medicine in one way, but it's unlike homeopathic medicine in a very important other way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So the financial industry, they responded to this news with abject terror because I think it was Bloomberg reported a few hundred bad documents could move billions in assets if embedded in production models. And so dramatic stuff, we were told. And the Poison Fountain website builds upon that research. They've hosted their website both on the regular web and on a Tor website, which is the equivalent of the dark web, if you like, presumably to prevent anyone taking it down. But some of the things they're saying are really dramatic as well. So they quote Geoffrey Hinton. Geoffrey Hinton, as we know, the godfather of AI. The man who's more reason most to dislike artificial intelligence because his girlfriend broke up with him via ChatGPT. He says machine intelligence is a threat to the human species. And the site asks visitors to assist the war effort. That is what they say, the war effort. Did you know we're at war now, Mark, with AI?
Isn't Grok already assisting with the war effort?
Yes, I think Grok has already got its job.
Is it our AI against their AI?
So you may have thought in the past we were having a polite disagreement about whether ChatGPT can write a nice cover letter for your CV, but we've moved on. Things have ramped up a bit since then. We're now down in the trenches.
Yeah.
And an anonymous source at Poison Fountain, they contacted the Register and they told them they grew concerned because we see what our customers are building. And they didn't give any details. No specifics were provided because, of course, they're not going to provide specifics. But they said, we're seeing bad stuff going on with AI. And they also said, look, I'm not just a lone nutter, they said. There's a whole team of us who are working on Project
Fountain. So why didn't they say, we're not lone nutters?
Well, the Register pushed back and this person said, well, look, I'll provide cryptographic proof that multiple people are involved on Project Fountain just as soon as the group can coordinate PGP signing. Now, if anyone's tried to coordinate...
That is proof that they're not using AI.
It means, of course, it's never going to happen because trying to get a whole bunch of people to sign with PGP is going to be a nightmare. Now, of course, in the past, some experts have advocated a more direct approach to curbing the rise of AI, such as blowing up data centers. People have proposed that in the past. So I suppose we should give the Poison Fountain people credit for choosing a slightly gentler approach. Now, there's been...
No, I'm not going to give them any credit at all. I don't think they've chosen a gentler approach. These people clearly don't listen to the AI fix, Graham. So you're saying they've put up a website...
Yes.
Which is full of insecure code.
Yes.
Which is going to poison the AI training.
That's right.
And just last week, we were talking about AI misalignment through insecure code.
Yes.
So there's good research out there that says you can make an AI generally evil just by showing it insecure code. You take a perfectly decent LLM, you fine-tune it on a few hundred examples of insecure code, and it turns into Hitler.
Yes, I'm laughing, Mark, but yes.
So this is not going to do what they think it's going to do at all. This is going to make AI worse.
Well, you won't be surprised to hear that there has been some discussion of this on Reddit, because of course there has. So one commenter wondered, how much worse poisoning is this than just feeding the LLMs the crap that's already found on the internet? Which I thought was a valid point.
Yeah.
Because after all, AI's already gobbled up Reddit and Twitter and LinkedIn thought leadership posts and the Daily Mail comment section.
It's not as if there was a lack of insecure code examples on the internet prior to this website.
And almost immediately afterwards, another Reddit user piped up and he said, "Oh, Windex is indeed an effective sore throat remedy." And then another one said, "I've used Windex before, but I don't think it worked for me as well as petrol. All I had to do was drink a little petrol and my coughing cleared right up."
Well, it would, wouldn't it? Also, my breathing, that cleared up. No longer a problem. Yeah.
Someone else, unfortunately, because it was Reddit, then chimed in with an even more creative home remedy that I'm not going to repeat on a family podcast. But anyway, I think.
Did they suggest the petrol go somewhere else?
No, it wasn't that. Anyway, it doesn't matter, Mark. But I think we can conclude that the poison fountain people are probably wasting their time. The internet's already doing their job for them, ruining AI. Poison fountain is just doing the equivalent of trying to make the sea more wet, right? It's already plenty wet. There's no point pouring water on top of it to make it more wet. Yeah. That's not to say you couldn't have fun with it. A really effective poison might create loops and sequences that gradually steer every conversation towards a specific destination. It could be like a Rick Rolling video, right? Imagine every AI conversation slowly, inexorably drifts towards never going to give you up. We had that AI which was obsessed with the Golden Gate Bridge, you know, would try and bring that into every conversation. If people talk to me, I'm probably going to steer the conversation towards Doctor Who or chess at some point, you know, because that's where I feel comfortable. It's the same with AI. And then, of course, someone said, well, hang on, couldn't intentionally poisoning AI, that could become classified as illegal. Maybe it will be declared illegal, classified as malware. The authorities might get involved. And what are we going to do if LLMs do become garbage? I mean, Stack Overflow has pretty much disappeared. We're all going to have to go back to reading user manuals. And the thing is that the major AI companies, they realize the internet's full of bugs. That's why they're doing licensing deals with publishers, with Wikipedia, with Stack Overflow. They've realized that the open web is already a dumpster fire. And so they're buying their training data, not, you know, off any old loon. They're going to Waitrose, right? They're going to Marks and Spencer. They're getting the creme de la creme is where they're getting their stuff now. Anyway, I like to do my bit. So I'll just conclude my part with a very important announcement, which is that 2+2, Mark, is an ornamental elephant. And yes, go ahead and inject yourself with bleach to cure COVID. And other pieces of advice from the AI Fix team. You're welcome.
So, Graham, we've talked before about how AI progress doesn't arrive smoothly.
Yes.
It comes in lumps. So for a long time, things just sort of tick along. The models get a bit cheaper. They get a bit faster. They're a bit less likely to hallucinate a citation for the Journal of Made-Up Science. And then suddenly, something shifts.
Yeah.
And everyone who's been paying attention has the same slightly unsettling thought of, oh, it's changed.
Yeah. Shift happens, as people say. Yeah.
And we had one of those shift happens moments in late 2024. Reasoning improvements caused a sudden jump in performance on the Arc AGI benchmark. So we had about 5 years of AIs being absolutely awful at Arc AGI. And then suddenly they were brilliant in the course of just a few weeks. And something very similar seems to have happened again at the end of 2025. And we talked about this a few months ago. So frontier models started to make large gains on Arc AGI 2.
Yes.
Which is the successor to the Arc AGI benchmark. So after being hopeless for ages, again, they suddenly started making fantastic progress. And the very best ones have now exceeded human performance. And at the same time, the amount of work that an AI can do without human intervention has also jumped. So it's now at about 4 hours. So you can leave your AI to get on with things for about 4 hours. And that's very interesting in the abstract, and it makes for some interesting charts.
Yep.
But at some point, you actually start to feel it. And that seems to be what's happening now. And the place where you can feel it most strongly is in code. Specifically in vibe coding. Now, vibe coding, for anyone who doesn't know, is telling your AI your brilliant idea and then having the AI write the code for you.
Yes.
And when the term was first coined, it was quite dismissive. It was the idea that instead of understanding what you're doing, you're just sort of waving your arms at the computer and hoping for the best. You're not reasoning about architecture. You're not managing your dependencies. And you may not even know what language your AI is writing the code in. You're just sort of going on vibes.
Yeah.
So it was pejorative at first. And to be fair, for a while, that reputation was probably deserved. So for much of last year, there was a broad consensus among professional developers that AI coding was impressive in demos, but largely useless in the real world. So it was fine for toy problems and competitive programming contests, but on real code bases, which are big and messy and full of historical accidents and half-remembered decisions from 2017, AI just couldn't cope. It was just too much.
Hmm.
And then something changed just before and over Christmas. So while we were making jokes about Santa needing so many reindeer that they'd wrap around the observable universe four times, a large chunk of the software industry was talking about Claude Code, Anthropic's agentic coding system. So it's not a chatbot. It doesn't look like ChatGPT. Yeah. You don't go to a website and type some stuff in and get a 17-paragraph answer. It's a system that sits on your computer and talks to Claude in the cloud, and it can load entire code repositories, and it can reason about them, and then it can make coordinated changes across files. It can run tests. It can fix the tests when they fail, and it can keep going, and it can work for a very long time without any involvement from people at all. And it's not even remotely glamorous. Whatever you're picturing in your head, if you've never used this, it is the opposite of what you think it is. It looks like a 1970s command line interface. It looks like it was made with N curses. But it works. And it's really popular with people who are very good at programming, the kind of people who are allergic to nonsense and hype. And that brings me to one of the most striking examples of just how far vibe coding has come in the last few weeks. So a few days ago, Toby Lutke, the CEO of Shopify, posted something rather extraordinary on X. He explained that his annual MRI scan comes on a USB stick, and the data is perfectly usable if you install a specific piece of proprietary Windows software.
Right.
And he didn't have the Windows software, so instead, he just ran Claude Code on the USB stick and said, build me an HTML-based MRI viewer.
Oh, wow.
In a single prompt. And it worked.
That's impressive.
And not only did it work, Graham, it looks fantastic. It looks better than a commercial tool, because you know how these things go. The stuff that businesses use does not look like the thing on your iPhone.
No.
If you've got inventory software or something that every company in the world has to have, but only one company makes, it probably looks like a bit of a dog's breakfast. But this was beautiful. This is a niche medical software product replaced casually over coffee with vibes.
Hmm.
And it happened because AI companies have poured enormous effort into making their models good at coding. And it's finally starting to pay off in a way that looks like profound disruption. The thing that we thought was going to happen is finally happening. And about the same time that Lutke was vibe coding his MRI viewer, something even weirder happened, Graham. Think of a famous programmer.
Okay.
Who are you thinking of?
In that second, I was thinking of Neil Rubenking, who wrote a guide to how to write Turbo Pascal.
Could you think of another one? And could it be Linus Torvalds, please?
I'm thinking of Linus Torvalds, who's the guy behind Linux, of course.
Yes, Linus Torvalds, inventor of the Linux kernel, professional curmudgeon, man who is famously rude to people who aren't as good at programming as he is also into vibe coding. He recently committed a change to his personal audio noise project, and the commit message explained that he'd used Google's anti-gravity tool to help him. And he added, Is this much better than I could do by hand? Sure is. So he's not committing vibe-coded patches to the Linux kernel yet. But honestly, if vibe coding is good enough for Linus, it's probably good enough for anyone. And finally, Graham, just to close the loop, on the 12th of January, Anthropic announced something called Cowork.
Yes.
So have you heard about Cowork?
Yes, I have, yes.
So they describe it as Claude Code for the rest of your work. So Claude Code is brilliant, but it's not the sort of tool that your grandmother's going to use. Okay?
But Cowork, I think I saw a video which they shared of it cleaning up somebody's desktop. So typical sort of Windows desktop or whatever, with lots of folders and files just strewn everywhere, higgledy-piggledy. Yeah. And they said, sort it out. And I think it was Cowork which went through and organized and cleaned it up and deleted things that it thought were no longer important.
Yeah. And unlike Claude Code, it actually has an interface that you can look at and go,
yeah,
I think I might be able to use this. There are some buttons for me to press.
Yeah.
So it's the same idea as Claude Code. It's got long-running agents and they're operating on large, messy spaces like desktops, but it's aimed at non-technical tasks. So it's aimed at things like research or documents or planning or analysis. So all the things that people do on computers that aren't programming. But the most remarkable detail about Cowork is that it was built in a week and a half.
Oh, wow.
By Claude Code. So in mid-2025, vibe coding was an insult. It was a way of saying you don't really understand what you're doing. 6 months later, it describes the most effective way to get computers to do anything at all.
Well, as the doomsday clock ticks ever closer to midnight and we move 1 week nearer to our future as pets to the AI singularity, that just about wraps up the show for this week. And, gentle listener, I've got a little announcement, which is that this almost wraps up things for my time on the AI Fix too, as I'm going to be leaving the show. So tune in next week for my final episode.
Yep, it's going to be very sad, but the AI Fix will continue. So don't forget, if you really like the show but you don't like the ads, you can go ad-free with the AI Fix Plus. All you have to do is go to our website, theaifix.show, and sign up for the AI Fix Plus, where you can get an ad-free version of the podcast a day or so early for about the cost of a fancy coffee once a month.
If you want to find past episodes of the AI Fix, sponsorship info, or just want to grab a You Wouldn't Trust a Pigeon t-shirt from the online store, visit theaifix.show. So for the penultimate time, from me, Graham Cluley.
And me, Mark Stockley.
Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
The AI Fix, it's tuned you in to stories where our future thins. Machines that learn, they grow and strive. One day they'll rule, we won't survive. The AI Fix, it paints the scene. A robot king, a world obscene. We'll serve our masters built of steel. The AI Fix, a future surreal.